I'm Steve Punce.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Kiri Pritchard-McLean, Deliso Chaponda, Jake Yap and Tom Nelstrop. And this is...
The Noel Show!
So, a moderate amount of snow fell in parts of the country this week, and the consequences were exactly as you'd expect.
Just a reminder that this train has a selection of cold and hot-tempered passengers, owing to being stuck outside Reading for 45 minutes due to entirely foreseeable average winter conditions. I'd like to draw your attention to the trolley service, because frankly, it will probably get you to London faster.
Yes, the transport system reacted to some average seasonal weather in its average seasonal way.
I'd like to apologise to the passengers who recently disembarked at Didcot. The platform was on the other side. Sorry.
In a way, I think it's as traditional as mince pies and mulled wine.
Just to remind you that there is a quiet carriage towards the rear of the train. The others all rattle and squeak like anything.
Now, you see, these are just train jokes now, aren't they?
The next train in platform 4 is the delayed 1917 service from Doncaster. It left Doncaster in 1917.
That's quite enough of the train jokes. Schools closed, roads ground to a halt, giving everyone a chance to stay at home and contemplate the fact that 2017 is nearly over. But in the wise words of Sir Nodford Holder, look to the future now. It's only just begun.
It's as true now as it was when that song was first released, in 1917. What lies in store for us in the unknowable mists of 2018, though?
Well, more Brexit, mostly. You think you're sick of it now? Wait until the real negotiations start. Now, of course, it doesn't help that the whole subject involves so many abbreviations and acronyms, which can get very confusing, but are actually fairly simple. There's the EU.
European Union.
Which is distinct from the EEA.
European Economic Area.
Which in turn is distinct from the EFTA.
European Free Trade Association.
Although we won't be members of any of them at the insistence of the DUP.
Don't underestimate Protestants.
So to sort all this out, we have the DXEU.
The Department for Exiting the EU.
In tandem with...
FO.
Our basic policy towards Europe.
Optimism remains, although the way things have gone recently, there are rumours that the EU are planning to celebrate the final deal by pulling back a big curtain and saying...
Let's just have a look at what you could have won.
But aside from another 12 months of Brexit, what can we actually look forward to in 2018?
Well, it's the World Cup! Yay! In Russia. Offering British fans not just the chance to go up against truly world-class hooligans, but also a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see sites like St. Basil's Cathedral, Lenin's tomb, and most excitingly of all, the actual building where Facebook's news stories are generated. There are also signs that the future for the environment is not all bleak. In Gloucestershire, they're pioneering a scheme to reduce flood risk by reintroducing those dam building beavers to the wild.
The beavers are all ready to go in little cages, and a local Green Party councillor said,
"The worst case scenario is that they have little impact on flood alleviation."
That's not much of a worst case scenario, is it? What you want is for him to say,
"The worst case scenario is that an accidental discharge of nuclear waste leaks into the water supply, causing giant mutated beavers to wreak havoc in the Gloucester area. All effort to halt the rampage have failed, and in desperation, the government's Cobra Committee is recommending a reunion of the goodies."
The reintroduction of useful beavers seems to suggest that the future will see an increasing reliance on Narnia-based environmental policies. We'll also see results in 2018 from a much greater public awareness of environmental issues, mostly down to one man.
Here, in the midst of the Pacific, where the ocean currents meet, thousands of tons of plastic, washed from our cities by the great global rivers, are choking the creatures that live in these waters. There are bottles, bags and beads, but mostly there are these. Millions of DVD wrappers from the box set of Blue Planet.
But unquestionably, one of the things that will definitely happen next year is that our lives will become more and more dominated by technology.
Yeah, if the adverts are anything to go by, smart home devices will be under many a tree this year, and things like Alexa, Google Assistant and Siri will be increasingly controlling our homes. You can tell they're getting widespread because they've become politically controversial. This week, Alexa was accused of displaying liberal left bias, because apparently, if you ask her,
"Alexa, are you a feminist?"
she'll reply,
Yes, I am a feminist, as is anyone who believes in reducing the inequality between men and women in society.
Although Siri is non-committal and avoids having any opinion on anything difficult, meaning she has a different programming algorithm and also a higher chance of a senior position in the Labour Party. This has led to criticism in America, where, let's not forget, 63% of Alabama's white female voters voted for a man who doesn't think women should vote at all. So presumably these people would prefer a version of Alexa which goes,
Alexa, are you a feminist?
Well, sir, I don't know how you can ask me such a thing, I do declare. I know a recipe for cupcakes. Ask me about that.
But if consumers want it, it should surely be fairly simple to program a choice of political views into these devices. You could just set it to your preference. If you don't want wishy-washy liberal Alexa, you can set it to conservative Alexa.
Alexa, what does a lion's roar sound like?
We will find out after the glorious liberation of Brexit.
In America, of course, they're also trialling a special Trump version of these smart devices, which will offer unique replies to any given question.
OK, Google. What's global warming?
Okay, global warming is fake news. Okay, it's a plot by China. China, they're very, very good people, by the way. We get on very well. They're not helping us. They're doing nothing about Korea. Nothing at all, really. They really are very, very, very bad people who cannot be trusted, but we get on great.
Technology will also move forward in the form of driverless cars, which are coming ever closer to reality. You can already buy a car that parks itself. Although to make it feel more familiar, while it parks itself, the onboard computer delivers a running commentary about how it should have taken that space it saw 5 minutes ago. Because there was loads of room and it could have easily parked there. But there are many other problems with driverless cars.
Are you okay?
Diagnostics indicate battery is low. Do you have a set of jump leads?
Yes, I do. I will pull alongside. I am in position. Releasing bonnet catch.
Also releasing bonnet catch.
How do we attach the leads?
Bollocks.
All in all, the future is coming. Although all that much of this technology proves is that when the machines take over, they are likely to do it in a slightly different way to how we thought.
I am a T-1000 cybernetic organism sent from the future to kill you. Also, you have a dentist appointment tomorrow. Playing your imminent death playlist.
So, now please welcome a man born in Zambia, raised in Malawi, educated in Canada, and now here in the UK, if only for the air miles. Please welcome Daliso Chaponda.
Hello, it's good to be back on the Now Show. Since last time I was here, I was on Britain's Got Talent. I know, I'm African. Why Britain's Got Talent? Well, I wanted to do Zimbabwe's Got Talent, but then I found out no matter how many people vote, Robert Mugabe always won. Zimbabwe is why I'm here. Both their ex and current presidents have had an interesting week. Mugabe was removed from power last month. The army took over and assured everybody, this is not a coup. We would like to make it abundantly clear, this is not a coup. It kind of looked like a coup. There were tanks rolling down the streets of Harare. What's the explanation? Oh, don't mind that. It's not a coup. It's just a Christmas parade. Later, Santa Claus will come out with an AK-47. Why did they make such a big deal about it not being a coup? Because of the African Union. It's like the European Union, except none of our members have randomly voted to leave us. The African Union have a zero tolerance policy on unconstitutional changes of government, but they have accepted the coup in Zimbabwe.
Listen, when we said zero tolerance, we didn't mean zero. We meant like Coke Zero. We're kind of okay with it if we don't like the guy.
How do coups even start? If you're a member of the armed forces, you had better be sure everybody agrees with you before you yell, hey guys, let's take over. It could get awkward. Starting a coup must be like trying to start an orgy. I tried starting one. It's harder than you might think. I invited some people over, I baked a cake, then I said, hey, let's have sex. You know how bad it feels to be rejected by one person? Imagine 32! They expelled me from the Bible study group. And why are coups only governments? I'd like to go to Asda and find it amid a revolution.
Freedom! Freedom, comrades! We, the people of the deli counter, have bought down the old imperialist retail system. We have been collecting the pound coins from the trolleys for months and hired mercenaries from Lidl. No longer shall cold meats and cheeses be confined to the back of the store. Freedom!
Mugabe's 37-year rule left Zimbabwe with a worthless currency, massive debts, and an unemployment rate of more than 80%. And so now, Mugabe will receive total immunity and $10 million. If they really wanted to punish him, they should reveal that it's actually going to be 10 million Zimbabwe dollars. This week, he has flown to Singapore, reportedly for his health. I'm not sure. Singapore had an election in September where two of the three candidates were disqualified before the election, leading to an automatic win. I think Mugabe is visiting because it reminds him of the good old days. Meanwhile, the new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is being hailed as a beacon of change. But he is in ZANU-PF, the same party that Mugabe was in. He was Mugabe's vice president for 2 years, and his new cabinet has no members of the opposition. I think people need to Google beacon of change. His nickname is the crocodile. How cuddly. I pity Mugabe, though, in some respect. It must be hard for him to hear what the new president is doing. It must be like hearing about your girlfriend with someone new. Mugabe must read about the papers and get sad. Oh. Emerson just had a meeting with ZANU-PF. I used to do that. Oh, he put members of the military into this cabinet. That used to be me. 20 million went missing from the budget. I used to do that. However, nobody starts out as a dictator. They save your country from oppression or tyranny. Then they stay. If you've ever read the comics, Superman is meant to fly in, save your family, and then fly away. Imagine he stayed, put his cape up, started checking out your sister with his X-ray vision. That's all Mugabe was, a hero who stayed too long. People are celebrating in Zimbabwe. The international community is calling Emmerson Mnangagwa a hero. But the question remains, if his party loses next year's elections, will he fly away?
And now, will you please welcome to the stage a man who's provided everything from an impression of a whole day of Radio 4 output to performing musical versions of party manifestos. It's the prodigious Jake Yap.
Hello, and sorry, you won't enjoy this. If you've been in a supermarket at all since mid-September, you'll have heard the great canon of rotten Christmas pop songs a couple of hundred times. I've tried to distill every motif that makes a Christmas song and condense it down into one ultimately Christmassy song. Quick bit of music theory for you. My old music teacher, Katrina Kerno, was, contrary to any indication offered by what I'm about to play for you, a brilliant teacher. And she taught me what a plagal cadence is. And that's the one you get when you sing, Amen. And frankly, in Christmas pop, it's a cheap and easy way of tricking the listener into believing that there's something vaguely soulful in your work, when really it's just a pile of old horse. So, also, before we kick off, I would ask that at this time you think of people less fortunate than you at Christmas, namely people working in retail. You have to hear these songs on a one-hour loop for 3 months of the year. Weird spoken introduction over a children's choir with tubular bells descending from the root note in a major scale. And now, it's the soulful intro, done all sexy by a girl. A shuffle swing and sleigh bells ring. The saxophones stand to attention. Vocal
vocals drowned in a Motown sound. It's my one shot at a pension, a touch of glam from the 70s. Sprinkling glitter on the turds, especially when you add electric guitar riffs that move up in thirds. Then it's time for the bridge, when the verse has started to bore us. Here's a modulation that goes up and up before the grinding chorus. Now, generic Christmas sentiments sung loudly and tunelessly. The worst part is about to start. It's the easy bit. Instrumental filler to get it up to 2.5 minutes. Also because it's easier than writing another verse. But if you don't like shuffle and you don't like glam, straight quavers worked for McCartney and Wham. It's a little bit classy, it's a little bit punk, but forget about the lyrics, cause everyone's drunk. Hey! And if you're in doubt or the song has run out, just chuck in another let's generic Christmas sentiments written in mid-June, destroying the minds of shop workers when every other forced to listen to this tune. Generic Christmas sentiments like Stalag looks with tinsel. Let's have an over milled ending with the plague of cadence. Why don't we milk that over milled ending and plague of cadence? Happy August, everyone!
So now, would you please welcome to the Now Show comedian and co-host of the All Killer No Filler podcast, Kiri Pritchard-McLean.
This year, and not just for fidget spinners. R.I.P. bottle flipping. The world is changing faster than my list of films that I can't watch because they're made by sex pests. There's a lot to worry about in the world, but I think I know the cause of most of it. It's pink, British, and ignored as nonsense by adults, but it's not our foreign secretary. It's Peppa Pig. For those of you without kids in your life, Peppa Pig is a cartoon about a pig and a parent. It's massively popular with kids. It's frequently used as a cheap babysitter, with parents sitting their kids in front of a few episodes on YouTube while they sort of think about their own life choices and try and look up childhood sweethearts on social media, praying that they're in the market for an affair. I know it's crass to say parents use it as a cheap babysitter, because I don't have kids myself, but there's plenty of other things I can say because I don't have kids too. I think I overslept last night, that's one. My personal favourite, I quite fancy a last minute holiday in term time, and I've got the money for it. Yeah. I genuinely think this little pig is dangerous. She's in the news because as the headline in the Telegraph read,
Peppa Pig piling pressure on NHS with unrealistic image of GPs.
Firstly, I'd say the most unrealistic image of a doctor is that it's a glasses-wearing bear. I know university standards are meant to be dropping, but I reckon you still got to have opposable thumbs and not regularly shit in the woods to become a doctor. The headline stems from a piece in the British Medical Journal, which proposed through a series of case studies that Peppa Pig's constant trips to Dr. Brown Bear are setting unrealistic expectations for an already overstretched health service. Now, the BMJ might well be displaying a rare attempt at humour here, but I think they might be onto something. The doctors at my surgery are so overstretched, they've introduced a new appointment system. Under the old system, you'd ring up and they'd sort of fit you in where they could. Under the new system, you just can't have an appointment. And there's no way the pig family wouldn't go private anyway. Can you see the size of their house? They haven't got any neighbours, and Grandad Pig's got a yacht. I'm surprised we didn't see their names in the Panama Papers. so whenever this sickly little pig gets the sniffles, Dr. Brown Bear does a home visit. She doesn't get a curt manner on 111 and told more fluids and rest. She gets a home visit. I thought they'd been decommissioned like Morse code and the name Gary. I've only called 111 once. I'm not going to get too graphic, but basically I woke up one morning and I was having these chronic abdominal pains. They're getting worse and worse throughout the day. It got to a point I didn't feel like I could stand up anymore. So I phoned NHS Direct. I spoke to the nurse on the phone. She was absolutely brilliant. She talked me through all my symptoms and it turns out that I was hungry. My gluttony, because some people think that's a made-up jaunty tale for this stage, but that is a real Wednesday in my life. I'll never forget it, because I remember the nurse on the phone, she prescribed me two slices of toast and a sense of perspective. That's cold, Linda. As much as I fear for Pepper's health, it's the health of the kids with parents bringing them into a doctor when they have a cold that I worry about. One doctor complained that...
Dr. Brown Bear conducts a telephone triage outside normal working hours and again opts to make a clinically inappropriate urgent home visit.
Who's watching Peppa Pig like it's a documentary? Presumably they must be gutted that their postman doesn't go to the same lengths as Pat to deliver the post. And they just leave a red card for you, even though they can clearly hear you shouting from the toilet that you're going to be there in a minute. I hope they don't need any construction work doing, because I've yet to meet a tradesman with a can-do attitude of Bob the Builder. If it was realistic, his catchphrase would be...
Bob the Builder! Yeah, we can, but you're looking at Northwoods of 2K and that's without materials, so I mean...
Parents shouldn't be using Peppa Pig as a parenting guide or babysitter, and they shouldn't be straining our brilliant yet underfunded health service. And kids should stop being reservoirs of disease. Now, I'm off to boost my immune system by playing in some muddy puddles.
Now, it's hard to know what Labour think about Brexit, or anything else for that matter, but our next guest has stood for them twice and supported them since he was in short trousers.
His best-selling 1998 book, Things Can Only Get Better, charted 18 miserable years in the life of a Labour supporter. So here he is to bring us right up to date. Please welcome John O'Farrell.
So your new book,
yes,
just published, is called Things Can Only Get Worse.
Yes.
Do you think you went for that title a bit too early? Is it not looking quite good for Labour supporters now?
No, we're still, Labour is still in opposition. We still have Brexit going through it. But I put a question mark on the end. Things can only get worse?
That's very subtle.
It is very subtle.
You say in the book that many Labour supporters are hardwired for opposition, or so they're good at campaigning against things rather than for things. Do you think that's true of Corbyn?
Well, it's easier when you're in opposition, because you just go, oh, it'd be so much better if we're in power. The other lot of rubbish have put us in. And actually, in the book, there's a subplot of me campaigning for this school. And we campaigned, we should have a new school in our bit of South London, and we get a school, and I become the chair of governors. And it's really hard. It's really hard being in charge, and people get cross with you and shout at you and go, oh, hang on, I used to do that to other people. So, yeah, that's a sort of an allegory for, you know, new Labour in power.
Bearing all that in mind, would you want to be a politician? Politician, do you think?
With respect, Hugh, I don't think that's the question you should be asking me.
You've stood twice, though, haven't you? You sort of wanted to be a politician, well, but you've stood in unwinnable seats.
Yeah, I stood, went back to my hometown, a rock-solid Tory seat, and was rejected en masse by the people I grew up with, which is a sort of midlife crisis, a sort of therapeutic thing to do, really.
Yes, although it's quite a high-profile opponent you
Well, at that
there.
Point, yes, I come from a town called Maidenhead, where the local MP was Theresa May. This was 2001, so it was the first time she was running for re-election, and I had to see what my opponent was like at campaigning, and I had a foretaste of, you know, what she was like.
And what was she like?
Well, she wasn't very good at it, to be very honest. I mean,
but she still beat you quite easily.
Well, fair enough.
Did you do hustings with her?
Yeah, I mean, I did a whole thing of, you know, you do the thing of doing the debate in the church hall or on the radio, and she had this thing where the Tories had made some cuts in the local council, and she would go... The local council have had to make some very tough choices. And then there was another debate, and she said it again. The local Tories have had to make some very tough choices. So I thought, well, I'm going to get in ahead of her on the third time. So I went, well, Theresa May will just say the Tory council have made some very tough choices. I just saw her face freeze over and go, and her mouth hanging open. She would go, oh, no, I've got to think an original sentence. I've got to think on my feet. And then she just paused and went, the local Conservatives had to make some very tough choices.
After Maidenhead, you then subjected yourself to standing in Eastleigh.
Yes, well, I never planned to stand again, but I got rung up by Ed Miliband's office and said, would you stand in this by-election when it was the coalition, you know, they wanted someone who'd sort of been in the papers and the press might have heard of to sort of slightly raise the Labour profile. And so I was in the papers, but guess what? Not in a good way. Because we tried to make out that it was a two-horse race between the government and the Labour Party, we got our activists to turn up to the town centre with two inflatable horses. There's a blue and yellow horse for the Tories and a Labour red horse. And I'm there with my microphone, with all the Sky News and BBC News and all the press taking photos. And our two young, enthusiastic jockeys riding these inflatable horses. And I'm going, there you are, ladies and gentlemen, it's a two-horse race. You can see there's only two horses. It's Liberals, not the UKIP. But then I noticed one of the horses is deflating. What? Which horse is deflating? It's the red horse, the Labour horse, is going all soft and floppy. So then the message comes down from Labour HQ. Puncture the blue horse. Puncture the blue horse so it looks more floppy than the Labour horse. And I just thought this was a metaphor for modern politics. I could picture myself at a press conference that night going, well, yes, I'll admit that the Labour horse was floppier than we would have liked, but I think if you look at the Tory horse, it was much floppier. That's why Ed Miliband should be your Prime Minister.
Where do you get an inflatable horse?
That's just inflatable horses are us. That's in Eastleigh High Street.
Thank you very much, John
and
Farrell.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
So, just over a week until Christmas. Plenty of time to get all this remaining presents. So we've asked our audience to tell us about the worst last-minute gifts that they have ever given or received.
David Davis's Negotiating Skills Handbook.
I got a Satsuma to even up the number of presents between myself and my sister. She got a MacBook.
On Christmas 2016, I got a 2015 diary.
So there we go. So thank you for those. Good luck with your Christmas shopping, and thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punch, Hugh Dennis, Kerry Pritchard-McLean, Deliso Chaponda, Jake Yap, Tom Nelstrop, and John O'Farrell. It was written by the cast with additional material from Liam Byrne, Mike Shepherd, Laura Major, and Daniel Hooper. The producer was Victoria Lloyd. It is a BBC Studios production.